This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back inside the MDN studio, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb will be back in the air chair momentarily. Every once in a while, he has to step out. But stepping in today, back for the first time for the MGoBlog Roundtable, is Ed Feng, thepowerrank.com. Ed, great to see you. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, man?
Doing really well. So what have you been working on? Tell people the latest projects in the world of Ed Feng and the Power Rank.
Yeah, I mean, on my podcast, Football Analytics Show, I'm doing a 10-part preview series. So it's 10 episodes. They're each about 10 minutes. So something short that you can get into real quick. I'll be covering college football and the NFL. There's an episode on Michigan. I did one on Nebraska, a couple NFL episodes, Colts. I'm still working on the last couple episodes, but they launch on Monday, August 19th, and that's every weekday until the start of the college football season, and until the first Saturday of the college football season.
And where will they be found?
You can get that anywhere you get podcasts. It's the Football Analytics Show, and so it's on Apple Podcasts. I just confirmed this week it's on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. So wherever,
pretty much wherever you get your podcast.
Wherever you get your podcast.
And, of course, we always say good morning to Brian Cook as well from MGoBlog. Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this week?
I'm well.
Good to see you guys back here inside studios. So let's jump right in, talk a little Michigan football. And yesterday, the quarterback coach for the Michigan Wolverines spoke to the media and talked more about the quarterbacks. And, I mean, I guess it's the easiest conversation we have because I don't think anyone has really any a whole lot of concerns about that position.
No.
Dude, would you like to know more? Come on, man.
Yeah, you could dive a little bit more and talk about your thoughts on it.
Well, I'm glad that things seem to be going well. It's people talk about how this is a good fit for Shea Patterson. It is a good fit for Shea Patterson, largely because he's been running this kind of stuff his entire career until up until last year. And when Michigan ran RPOs last year, it worked out pretty well. So I'm glad to see that they're going to be focusing on that aspect of the game.
Awesome. Did they talk about tempo at all?
They have talked about.
I mean, they've talked about it up and like here and there. They say they're going to pick their spots, which I think is the right thing to do. Like, you don't want to be running Mike Onwenu out there for 100 plays a game, but you do need the ability to do it for in the games, and the best way to be comfortable with that is to break it out in a couple drives a quarter, perhaps.
And obviously, they're not going to huddle. And Ed Ward had a great line about this. It's been a few months since he said he had a great line. He said, offensive linemen love the no huddle offense because it saves them about, 5-8 yards per play. And then you add that up over the course of a game, and that's a lot of yards. They're not going backwards and forwards. I don't think it quite adds up to that kind of math, but it won't be huddle, but there will be the tempo will be, I think, partly dictated upon also how they're doing, right? If they do what you're saying and they go a little quicker to game against a team and it works well, and maybe it's only puts them out to a 7-0 lead early in the game, maybe you bring it back again and try to push your lead to 14, 21, that kind of thing, and then you can pull the foot off the gas a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were close to dead last in tempo last year. And so the goal isn't to be Indiana. The goal is to, get to 60th, right? Just to be an average team that's comfortable changing speeds.
Well, and the goal is, God forbid this team actually is down in a game this year, that they don't take 30 seconds to run their next play when they need to score.
Yeah, that would be nice.
So you actually have the ability to, get up there quick and close down some leads. But of course, that's never going to happen, right?
So the other assistant coach that spoke yesterday to talk in the immediacy of them meeting with the media was defensive line. I think that there's more questions there than there would be, than there are, of course, on the offensive side at quarterback. But defensive line, we've been talking a little about this this morning as far as what they do. Maybe you compare it to pass downs versus non. I know Brian and Sam brought this up right before the end of the segment and the last hour. I'm assuming your concern still remains, the biggest concern for the team still remains the defensive front in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that Sean Nua was saying about Mike Duonfor is, not a big fan of it. Because he's talking about, he's doing the things that he can do, and he's got issues, he's limited. And if this is the same thing from spring and it's still affecting him deep into fall, and that was something that happened in the Maryland game last year, I mean, what are the prospects that he's fully healthy for the start of the season? It doesn't seem that it's great. So, and he's the guy who you're hoping it has like the breakout season and becomes like that two-way interior DL who's, you know, a threat against the run and a threat against the pass. And if he's not even consistently out there in fall camp, well, your chances of that breakout get pretty low.
Right. I was messaging with Zeke on Twitter this morning, and I came up with the best solution to your concern on the interior of the defensive line, and that would be to just get out to really big leads and then force the opponent to pass rushing downs, and then you can end up playing those three guys, Dana, Hutchinson, and Quiddy Pay together along the defensive front, because you're going to put your opponent in pass rushing situations in passing situations for much of the game.
Yeah, I mean, that is a possibility. I mean, Michigan's offense should be very good and explosive and could put a lot of offenses in a situation where they can't really, like, pound it over and over again. And, you know, Hutchinson's 280, Pay's 280. Like, I know Dana's up to about 260. So those guys aren't ideal as three techs, but if they're in particular situations against particular teams, you could get away with it sometimes. But
I mean, is Manna's looking like the third guy at defensive end right now, or he's going to...
Yeah, they talked about it yesterday that he's right in the last... and Jim talked about it on, on Tuesday as well. And he sounds like he's in that... I mean, they call him starter, third-man guy. I mean, I think it's a three-man rotation, however you want to call it. The defensive end spot's a three-man rotation. Then you get into real specific passing downs. You could say you'll probably see at times Josh Uche slot up to the rush end spot as opposed to playing the outside linebacker, but... Yeah, those three guys are the main guys on the end.
I mean, Uche's a really interesting, because they didn't play him very much last year. He got maybe 20% of Michigan snaps and had
seven sacks.
And, like, can we get him out there more often? He's 250. I know he's not going to be an ideal weak side end, and Michigan has some defensive ends. But, you know, you got to get that guy on the field for 40% of your snaps, half your snaps. Like,
well, but, I mean, is there some kind of issue that he's not... can't run with the linebackers, or is that why he's limited in snaps?
There isn't a spot. He's a Sam, and the Sam kind of alternates with the Viper, and so it depends on a lot of it, Brian, right? Depends on who you're playing and if you need to play three traditional linebackers or the size you need along the defensive front. A lot of it's going to be situational.
I mean, I don't think Hudson's coming off the field this year. He didn't come off the field last year. So I feel like that Viper is going to be a constant, and then, I mean, who are you pulling off the field for Uche? It's going to be a defensive lineman. It's almost certainly going to be an interior defensive lineman. So then it's, can your 3-3-5 survive against the run? Last year, the answer was, not really. So, you know, Michigan has the pieces to put together like a 3-3-5 stack, the old defense that Rich Rodriguez wanted to run. And
well, you have to run it properly, which didn't happen here.
Have to have some talent.
But, I mean, so the interesting thing about the 3-3-5 is it's often designed to, like, get around the fact that you don't have any talent. Now, Michigan has quite a lot of talent, but the ability to run that defense effectively would allow Uche to be on the field a lot more. I don't see it happening. I mean, they've run it from time to time, and they've never been able to consistently do it on a standard down without getting gashed.
And again, you just made a good point. Standard down. Because it really comes back to situationally, you could see the 3-3-5 stack a fair amount. If you put a team behind early in a game or late in a game, whatever it is, that they need to throw the ball more, the 3-3-5 could work and could be effective for this defense, because you're taking one of the interior guys off the field. You're rushing maybe three ends plus plus one guy in the middle. Depending upon it's less personnel, I think, dictated by Michigan this year, more dictated by who is. What the scenario sits up.
Yeah, and you got to think about, like, just where the sacks and the tackles for loss are coming from the end position, right? I mean, you lose two guys in the NFL draft, like Gary and Winovich.
I don't think there's going to be much of a drop-off in terms of total production from that position.
Because of faith in Hutchinson and Pay and...
Yeah, I think those guys are, I don't think anybody is going to match Winovich's individual productivity. But, you know, Gary was in and out of the lineup with an injury last year. He wasn't as effective as you wanted him to be when he was in. And Pay didn't really bring a whole lot of pass rush last year. So they keep talking about him like he's made a big step forward. I really expect Hutchinson to make a big step forward.
I think Pay will, too. By the way, I'm back. I had to go field this. This phone call, another phone call about how full of crap Luke Fickell is, but we'll We'll get back to Luke Fickell and his how full of bleep he is a little bit later on in the show.
I mean, you've got to figure that was someone important if you're skipping out on this segment, right, Sam?
I'm just saying, man. I mean, you see how very convenient. I didn't even understand why the topic came back up, quite frankly, that this seemed like it was handled a couple of weeks ago. And then, you know, I come back from paternity leave and, you know, Luke.
All this stuff is going on.
I was like, we're still talking about this. A head coach has no say ultimately in the waiver being granted. That they have been removed from the process, as I said before. And the part that gets me, so fellas, I spent time trying to figure out what was it that Luke Fickell was trying to coach Jim on. Because you remember Jim, he said in the press conference that he calls me up and he's asking about the position switch and he's trying to coach me up. And I was like, what could he possibly have been saying? Was he trying to get him to say that he was talking about being depressed? No, what he was trying to get Jim to say was that they forced him to move from the defensive line to the offensive line, that they forced him to. So, Brian, Cincinnati wants to go to the NCAA and say Michigan forced James to move, and that's one of the reasons why he transferred. But so he transferred to Cincinnati to play what position?
Offensive line.
Does that make any sense to you at all?
No.
It doesn't even compute.
No.
This is this backwards twisted Ohio State logic that's going on again.
Well, you know what I think about that.
And why? I mean, you look at the piece, and I talked about this yesterday. You saw Tom Mars in there, and we all know Tom Mars. I mean, he is dogged in his approach to this. He's an expert in the field, so much of an expert that he's been hired by the NCAA, right?
Yeah.
To be, I mean, the complex case unit. He is a private consultant now for the complex case unit, of which this is one. The Athletic talks to him. He says there's nothing more Michigan could do. I'm not going to tell you how I know. We know how. He works for the NCAA. But there's nothing more they could do. And that's at the end of the article. And there's no reference to the fact that he works for the NCAA. This just seems to me to be a big middle finger to Michigan.
Yeah.
From some folks down in Ohio, very convenient to get clicks as well.
Mm. But thankfully, for the most part, as the story continues, because Fickell goes in on it again last night and doesn't tell the full truth, and he goes, well, I got help from Day and I got help from Saban. Well, apparently they either wanted to cover something else up or they were going to lie and be willing to do it.
What kind of help? First of all, what kind of help did you get?
That's true too.
What kind of help did you get? I mean, could a head coach concoct a story to help LGBT? I mean, and when compliance comes to you and asks you a question, could you lie and say something that might influence compliance's response? I suppose. And that might be in the best interest of Nick Saban, maybe. I don't know. It might be in the best interest of Ryan Day. If there are some guys on their rosters that they didn't want and they said, hey, go to Cincinnati, we got a landing spot for it, that would make sense. Michigan didn't run James Hudson off the ride. They wanted James. James Hudson was going to be a piece of the future.
Yes, he was.
He wasn't the guy that they wanted didn't want to be a part of the program. So, I mean, to me, again, this is another example of taking a Harbaugh headline, and you can make hay with that, man. You can make huge hay with it as we see it right now. I know I'm giving it more air, but I mean, man, when you get confirmation of how full of
stuff
crap he is,
yeah.
It's like, come on, man. That someone would even spend time going to those links on this topic is what got me. I mean, the whole article is Tom Mars, is in my opinion. Tom Mars and the fact that Michigan's response to every single transfer was the same. Drew Singleton, Oliver Martin, James Hudson. Every single one, the response was, we are not going to oppose. We aren't going to be in a position to oppose or support because we don't want to be making judgment calls on the merits of the reasons for transfers for each of those guys. I thought when McGee said that, I thought that was powerful in my opinion. And it's very consistent. So you don't have to be accused of any guy or any school, Luke Fickell, of playing favorites with certain transfers when you approach them all the same. And that's exactly what Michigan did. Brian?
Yes.
I'm surprised, man.
Why?
I'm surprised that you aren't laying the boom. Laying the boom.
It's too close to the season. I gotta work on my season preview. Do you know how much stuff happened this summer? I am so behind.
I hear you.
There was a coaching search. There was baseball.
You have a toddler and a baby
at
home.
I don't have time for Luke Fickell.
You don't even have time to get pissed for a minute about Luke Fickell.
How does Luke Fickell have like his own personal beat writer that'll do his bidding at Cincinnati?
Gets the clicks, gets the people going.
All right, we were talking defensive line.
Yeah.
I apologize.
That's fine.
Guys.
No, you're fired up.
I apologize. I was fired up.
You don't have to live with that on your chest. No. I think we're going to break now.
We are going to break. All right. Got to get to a break. Back on the other side, more MGo Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. And we are back, folks. See, and you know what? It was one of the oddest things, guys, to be off. And so I didn't say anything about my wife's pregnancy all the way through until the very end when I had to announce why I was going to be gone. And so I've eased back here on the air. About to start easing back in on the site. And one of the toughest things is, how many positive messages I got from Buckeyes and Spartans? A ton from Buckeyes. It was the oddest thing known to me. It was kind of...
Yeah, it didn't happen with me.
I was shocked. It felt,
I was like,
I didn't even know how to feel about it. It's like, I'm not supposed to be appreciative.
If it's on Twitter, you just block them.
I don't block anyone.
You don't block anyone?
I don't block anyone.
Oh my, what?
I might mute a person here or there.
No. gotta be liberal.
But I put that out there to say that, I was looking for something to be that trigger, to get us back to normal, the Buckeye-Michigan thing back to normal where...
Well, here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, Luke Fickell, thank you. You're getting me back in my groove.
Whatever, he's a Bearcat, man. He doesn't even count.
Now, this is Ohio State thing all the way, man. This is an Ohio State thing all the way where, going back to his Ohio State roots and, banging on Michigan a little bit, or at least trying to. And not doing it very effectively because his point is so full of holes.
On the other hand, he is womping up on Michigan State and recruiting productively,
which is surprising to me. And so I do want to jump around a little bit. You're speaking to one of my few crystal ball misses so far. The Watley kid.
Yeah.
The defensive tackle who I thought Michigan State was going to get because their primary competition was Luke freaking Fickell.
They've lost like three or four guys to Cincinnati.
Like, how are you lose D'Antonio? How are you lose a guy to Luke Fickell?
Well, I think that they had that like Brady Hoke thing where they just moved everybody around without firing anybody. And I think that might presage the end. Like, they're going to have a decent team this year.
They are.
I don't know how they're going to do on offense. But like, I mean, there's the level of recruiting they were at previously, and then there's what they're doing now,
yeah,
where they have like zero top 15 guys in Michigan and they have two top 500 guys in the whole class, and one of them's like a legacy, like they're the only four star in their class is like
a snow.
Yeah. So what are you gonna do?
Yeah, man, I'm right there with you, but and I'm also right here with you about talking about Michigan State this year. I think their defensive line, one of the best in the country. Their defense as a whole, one of the best in the country. Offense last year was putrid. They got a lot of question marks there. I feel like coming back to Michigan, I'm very bullish about the offense.
Yeah.
I feel like even with a new system, that they're going to hit the ground running. They're going to be more explosive. Defensively, that is where my reservations come in. It's not that I don't think that they're capable. It's that I got to see some things before I'm ready to project Notre Dame and Ohio State. And I started out, I think our last roundtable, we were talking about what's your biggest question mark. And you said, hey, mine is interior defensive line. I said, I'm going with safety, coverage at the safety position. Everything that I've been hearing for the last few months, they are bullish on their view of what Brad Hawkins is going to be this year. And the players are saying the same thing. I think Brad Hawkins is going to show great improvement. I think that if he's half as good as what they think he will be this year, that he'll be an improvement coverage-wise at that position. So that what that has caused me to do is get aligned with you, Brian.
Yeah.
Get alignment with you and say, hey, I still have some concern about the back end, mostly depth concerns, like how deep are they back there? My bigger concern is that interior defensive line spot. What are they going to be? We saw last year that, especially from a pass rush perspective, that was a weakness for Michigan last year.
Yeah, and it was not the kind of weakness where it was like, oh, it's a little bit of weakness. It was the kind of weakness where it's just you got nothing. And that, I think, really affected what Michigan was able to do late in the season. Well, actually, it's funny because I've kind of moved my concern over to cornerback now.
I gotcha.
Because, like, when they're talking about Ambry yesterday, it's like he's not even on the 110-man roster right now. Like, the idea that he'd be back for the opener now seems, like, extremely
unlikely.
But I
told you that. When I told you guys it was ulcerative colitis.
I didn't know.
Way back then. And that my expectation from the first time I heard this was that we'll probably – and this is not from what coaches or players are saying. So let me be clear. This is not me relaying something from inside. This is my opinion based on – you know, talking to people in the medical field and that kind of thing about, you know, coming back from something like this and that he had lost weight. Now, Jim said in his press conference a couple of days ago that Ambry's weight is back up. I hear he's back up to around 185, which is great considering where I heard he was with his weight. But my expectation was that a realistic timeline bye week, that he is back full go. In the bye week, and he is back, you know, getting acclimated on the field in game action for the start of Big Ten play versus Wisconsin.
For people who don't remember when the bye week is, like me,
it's the third week of the season, and Michigan plays its third game in week four.
Okay,
at Wisconsin.
Yeah. So that to me was my outlook for Ambry, but that's actually a worthwhile legit concern about depth at that position. But I think maybe people are not appreciating their level of confidence in Jalen Kelly Powell as a guy that can add to the depth there at that position or compete, not just add to the depth, but compete with Vincent Gray at that spot. You know, so I think they feel pretty good about three corners.
I feel you got a guy who came in, you put him in safety. Then you're moving to cornerback, and like that worked out with Jeremy Clark. Mm-hmm. There were very specific reasons it worked out with Jeremy Clark because he was a guy who is 6'3" and could just put everybody in the boundary and be long. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that's the same case with Kelly Powell, and I'm a little bit like it doesn't feel like the right tackle battle where it's like both these guys are starters are going to be awesome, and I buy that.
The reason why it's a battle. Look, from a physical upside standpoint, that's why you love Vincent Gray. I mean, he's long. He's not as fast as Jeremy Clark, but he has good speed. But he has that length and physicality that you like at that position. You know, Jalen Kelly Powell is more quick than fast. He's probably a 4.6 guy. But he is.
So this doesn't. I don't feel good about that.
Michigan's, that's what they tend to see. What we've tended to see at that position here in recent years.
I don't think so. Like, you had David Long, you had Hill. I mean, Watson was definitely a 4.6 guy.
Watson's a 4.6 guy.
But with Ambry,
Channing Stribling was a 4.6 guy.
Yeah, but so I want cornerbacks a little bit better than Channing Stribling. No offense to Channing Stribling. Like, he was pretty good.
Channing Stribling had some length, too.
He was pretty good, but like, I want a guy who's a little bit better than Channing Stribling.
I hear you. Look, man, beggars can't be choosers at this point.
I understand that.
If you can get a guy that can be solid out there that knows the defense is assignment sound.
See,
which
this,
is what I think.
This sounds a little bit like that's not a high bar.
Well, I think it's about managing expectations. Okay. Kelly Powell is not going to be David Long.
Right. So we're managing expectations. I don't like doing that.
Guys,
big picture on this team in general, like, yeah, there's issues on the defensive line, there's issues in the secondary. But that's a small number of issues when you're talking about a college football team.
Oh, yeah. Look,
it's remarkable.
Well, this is all relative. We're talking about can we agree? I see Michigan at least being a 10-win football team.
They're going to be they can lose the Notre Dame game. They can lose the Ohio State game.
And still win 10 games.
And everything else, they're going to be heavily favored in. And maybe they'll dwarf one of those because that's what happens to college football teams sometimes.
Yeah, what about the game at Wisconsin, though? I mean, you know, they lose their quarterback, a bunch of important guys.
They're not losing to Jack Cohn.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but it's still going to be.
Mertz?
The word out of Wisconsin early is that Mertz is running third.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's the game that because I kind of want to agree with you, Brian, that we should be a pretty big favorite in that game, but it's still Wisconsin. Their defense was terrible last year. Michigan, their offense was good, but they lose so many guys. They still got Taylor to run the ball. I just don't know where that game is going to.
I mean, I think it'll be a tough game. I think that it'll be interesting to see if Wisconsin, their offensive staff, learned anything from last year when I couldn't understand right. What the hell they were doing.
No, their problem was that, specifically in the Michigan game, you know, they got into third and three. And they threw the ball.
Right.
But what are you doing?
Or just took Taylor off the field altogether.
Yeah, I mean, that was like the one thing you could do was like push guys off the line of scrimmage, right?
I mean, if you remember Indiana under Wilson, like they would get in third and three and they'd be like, we're going to run this two times and we're going to have this 19-play drive with tempo and we're going to kill Michigan's defense. And they did it.
But that's modern thinking that most coaches don't
Wisconsin
have.
Wisconsin was on the verge of being able to do that and then they threw on third and three and punted. And I'm like, just run the ball twice.
Yeah, well, Jonathan Taylor would have had 40 carries in that game.
Yeah, and maybe you'd have a different running back who had 15. But like, right. I'm going for it. Like, I'm setting myself up for every fourth and short, and just like Kianis Masmacho, and because it was Wisconsin in that game, but they didn't take advantage.
So what will the offensive approach be? Will be a big question. But I really feel like this Michigan offense is going to be more explosive. They're going to be able to hang more points on a Wisconsin defense that is expected to be solid.
They weren't Wisconsin on defense last year.
That was largely because their defensive line was ravaged by injuries. So they had their nose tackle Olive Segapulu, and then their starting guard last year is an offensive lineman. And the starting guard this year, Caden Lyles, played defensive end last year because they had nobody else to play. So he's going to start on offense this year, and that's where he should be playing. But he was a starting defensive end last year, and he was terrible.
I mean, but they still had some NFL linebackers back there. Like, you don't expect their front seven to fall off quite like it did, even, I mean, with a couple guys.
I mean, they were really, really scrambling at both of their DE positions. Right. And so if you can't keep those guys clean, they can't do what they do.
All right.
So it's a situation where...
So you expect regression back to top 15 levels?
I don't know, but maybe
they won't be they won't be what they were defensively when
like
you
two
had
2 years ago.
2 years and you had Stitchy and all those Watt,
those
and
cornerbacks
Beagle.
And hoodies.
Yeah, those.
I mean, I can see then Michigan being a 7-point favorite-ish in that.
They are
at Wisconsin.
I think they're a touchdown favorite in every game against Ohio State, except Ohio State right now. Where they're
interesting.
Favorite.
That's a lot of points for Notre Dame, I think, at home. Man, that's probably about right. It means you're about 4 points better than Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think they're pretty much exactly a TD favorite, and it's like 13 over Michigan State, and they have some big spreads.
I think Michigan will win that game. I think it'll be tough.
Yeah.
I think Jonathan Taylor will be a load for them to slow down.
I don't even think it's going to be that tough.
You don't? I do.
It's going to be one of those like slow motion beatings where it's like 21-7, but you didn't feel threatened the whole game. That's what last year was. That's what 2 years ago was. Like Wisconsin, the last two ones in Ann Arbor, the scores have been close because of missed field goals and stupid slow tempo stuff, but they haven't been as competitive as the scores have indicated.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but when we're talking about concerns, we're talking about concerns that would keep Michigan from being a Big Ten champion playoff team, not concerns that would make Michigan, you know, win fewer than 10 games.
Yeah, but I'd like that once in my life.
Like, no, it's nice.
And
you got people in Ohio worrying about a new head coach, a quarterback that's never started a college football game, 4 out of 5 starters gone on the offensive line, a defense that was terrible last year.
They were inconsistent last year. I wouldn't call them terrible.
They
weren't up to the standards that Ohio State usually has, but they weren't like
they were terrible.
They weren't UConn. Like, I mean,
okay.
So like,
fine.
But like,
so let's not put them against like American athletic standards.
They weren't
standards.
Even like a below average. Power five defense. They were about an average power five defense.
They were average if you look at success rate.
It
if
was
you
just,
put it yards per play, they were below average.
It was surprising watching that game how much better their linebacker play was, for instance. Like, what the heck is going on? I hate to even go back to that contest, but
as an offensive coordinator, if you make other people's linebackers look good, as Michigan did all year, that's a you problem. Because remember the Northwestern game when every time we had play action, they were in 10-yard zone drops, and every time we ran the ball, they were doing blitz ball? That's an offensive coordination problem. And I'm very, very hopeful that Michigan will put a lot more linebackers in conflict this year, because that's their whole offense now. It's like everything is deception. We're going to test both sides of the field consistently. You're not going to be able to just tee off on the same thing that we're running over and over again. And I can't tell you how long I've been waiting for this.
it was, you know, to your point, Ed, Ohio State's linebackers weren't good for most of the year. They were good in that game.
Exactly. So is that because the linebackers got good? No, it's because they knew it was coming.
It is 9:45. On a Thursday morning, one more segment of the MGO Blog Roundtable. We do have the phone lines open if you want to get in, but definitely want to, you know, kind of get you guys' take on, some of the other matchups in league. What they're saying about some of the other teams. I know, Ed, you're plugging your, your podcast, right? Where you're looking at some of the most overrated teams. I think one of the most overrated teams in the country resides in the Big Ten. So we'll get into that as well as some other Big Ten matchups here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider. Man, Thursdays are fun. My guys come back in studio. We do miss Craig. I mean, it is different without
Craig. I was going to say, you only mentioned that when Craig's gone, right?
We do miss Craig, but he'll be back.
He read poetry last time.
I heard. I got to go back and listen to it on the podcast. So I appreciate that. Brian Cook in studio, Ed Fang as well. Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass.
Yeah, Sam, we got an email in here from G.R. Taylor. Emailed and he said, Sam and the Buckeye messages. He said, Sam, I experienced a similar impression of Buckeye quote-unquote civility when hundreds of Buckeyes showed up in gear for Bo's memorial at the Big House. They always revert back to type, so Sam's honeymoon period with them won't last very long. And then he follows up by saying, Luke Fickell comes from a culture comfortable with cheating, so it's no wonder that he would look at the letter of the transfer waiver rule, and his first instinct is to evade it and expect Harbaugh to do the same.
Right, to cheat, to lie. Yeah, we forced James to play offensive tackle. And how does that even play? Like, think about Luke Fickell trying to make that point and him not realizing that it's freaking stupid. Now, I'm not saying Luke Fickell is stupid. I'm saying the point that he would be trying to make is stupid. That Michigan forced this player to move to switch positions, and we're going to have the player play that same position here. Who's monitoring this guy? He doesn't have anyone running checks and balances down there telling him this sounds idiotic. No one in the media will call that out except up here.
He's just cranky because he's not going to win 10 games again this year.
Did he win 10 games last year?
He won 10 games last year.
Well, all right.
Will Nebraska win 10 games?
Oh, no.
Yeah, so
but they could be good.
So you got a podcast series, right? So tell folks all about it.
He already did that.
Again.
I don't want to hear it again.
It's my 2019 football preview series. It's 10 episodes. Each one's 10 minutes long. It's just a short little snippet every day. Launches next Monday and every weekday till the first Saturday of the college football season.
I have a website too, so.
I know you. It's the MGO Blog Roundtable. We say that every time you come back. All right. So Ed, though, one of your podcasts, one installation in your podcast series will be on overrated teams.
Yep.
Does Nebraska register as one of the most overrated teams?
They could. So numbers wise, like, they have not performed. One of my preseason models looks at how they performed over 4 years, and that's the primary component in it. And Nebraska certainly doesn't project to be a top 20 team that way. But I think they're an interesting team because I think they got a lot of high upside on the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. Adrian Martinez is good.
Defensively, Ed.
Yeah, defensively,
hey man,
they're terrible.
They won a game 6-3 last year.
No, wasn't it 9-3 or was that actually 6-3 against Michigan?
Yeah. Well, against Michigan State. Michigan went so, differently.
I mean, this is part of what I talk about in the podcast. Is like, yeah, the good news, they get 4 out of 5 starters back on the defensive.
It was 6-3 against Michigan State.
Right.
With nothing to write home
and
about.
And a messed up Brian Lewerke. No, I mean, I talk about this, like, you know, the good news on Nebraska's defense, they get 4 out of 5 starters on the defensive line back.
I don't think anybody should expect Nebraska to win the division.
That's what's being predicted by a lot of folks, though.
Well, I mean,
no, but all right. I mean, so my odds say that Wisconsin, Nebraska, Iowa,
Minnesota.
And I think Minnesota are all about 20% to win that division.
Yeah,
it's
so
wide open.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's like they're definitely a contender for that division, and it could be basically anyone except Illinois. I mean, right. And I'd say Northwestern, but they won it last year because they're Northwestern.
Well, and Hunter Johnson could be good. Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, Minnesota is actually the most interesting team in the league to me because they have a legitimate top-flight receiver. They have their running back who graded out. I think he had an 80 grade from Pro Football Focus, which is real good. They get back Rodney Smith. They get back Shannon Brooks. They have Daniel Falele at right tackle.
You know, and that'll be interesting. Because I watched that kid in high school. Mm-hmm. He was so far away.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He was so far away.
We still should have taken him.
Man, if you had seen him, Brian.
I've seen him now.
Like, I wonder, because, you know, so Ed Warner recruited him at Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So, but Ed, he's a good developer. So,
yeah.
it would make sense, but I wonder with everything that he, you know, the array of talent he has at his disposal recruiting-wise here versus Minnesota,
right.
Would that have been a route he still went
down? I think that was the year Greg Frey was the tackles coach. And the idea of Greg Frey recruiting a 400-pound tackle is, like, he likes them.
That had no idea what he was doing.
And he likes taking tight ends and making them tackles, and does very, very well.
He does.
That. So it was never going to happen.
And he played right tackle last year for Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to do it again this year.
He's still going to be right? Okay, so that means probably something up in his pass blocking.
And they alternated between two true freshman quarterbacks last year. One of them a walk-on.
Right.
So probably a big step forward at quarterback. They've got a couple of good receivers. They could have an offense that really does some stuff.
So where do they play Purdue this year? Is that a road game?
I have no idea.
Because they destroyed Purdue last year.
I mean,
that was just the whole insane nature of
that division,
right?
So like,
but 41-10 though.
I know
they're at Purdue, week four or the fourth their fourth game.
I like this version of that division because it's interesting. And before it was just like, Wisconsin's gonna win. This sucks. It's boring. Even the teams that are good are kind of bad. And now it's like, oh, you got Brom at Purdue.
Yeah.
You got Row the Boat at Minnesota. Iowa's just Iowa.
I mean, Purdue's the top five team. That's a little bit lower.
So let's talk about Iowa. What do you think about?
Well, they got a great left tackle in Alaric Jackson.
just trying to aggravate me this morning. Clearly.
I'm also aggravated by that. But they've also got a great right tackle in Tristan Wirfs, who's a man. Like, that is a big dude. And senior quarterback Nate Stanley. I mean, if they could get Oliver Martin eligible this year, I have a bad feeling that, like, next year he's gonna have like 100 catches and 10 of them are gonna be against Michigan. I believe in that guy, and I'm very sad that he left.
I am not a big believer in Stanley at all, but for some reason Iowa just seems to do well against Michigan.
Well, and now you have like a fully weaponized AJ Epenesa, who's gonna be a top 5 pick possibly in the draft. They have some players, and their offensive philosophy is always gonna hold them back. They're always going to be kind of a stick in the mud who let people get away with stuff.
Yeah, and they're coming here, and it might be an ugly game, but Michigan's going to take care of that.
Yeah, I'm just, but they have some talent. They could be kind of interesting. And, you know, yep, Purdue and Minnesota. What was the other team that was kind of interesting?
Northwestern.
They're not interesting.
Nebraska.
You know, Wisconsin with quarterback issues and possibly defensive issues, so they've kind of come back to the pack. That's going to be a free-for-all.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I looked at Minnesota, their schedule, because who they don't play.
That the crossover games are going to be really important.
Oh, well, Wisconsin's playing Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State.
Yeah, I got to pull up Minnesota's schedule real quick.
Yeah.
Why?
The injustice of schedule. That's one of the episodes on my preview series.
Why Minnesota's schedule. Minnesota doesn't have Michigan. They don't have Ohio State.
They got Penn State
at home. They don't have Michigan State.
I don't think Michigan State missing them is actually a positive this
Minnesota,
year.
They got Penn State at home and then Maryland and Rutgers.
See, Michigan State can't be worse offensively. And they won't drop off defensively. Well,
but they could be the same offensively.
No. What's Lavorky's shoulder like? Because if he's healthy, like they're not going to be that bad.
Yeah, you're.
I think Michigan State wins 8 games.
I just want them to win 7.
With a chance to win 9.
Because for 4 straight years, they've had the quality of a 7-win team. It's just that they went 3-9 one year, and they went 9-3 one year.
Right.
And one year they were super unlucky, and one year they were super lucky. And I just wish that 7-5 had been like keeps happening over and over again.
We'll dig into this more as we'll have more Michigan to dissect next week. MGO Blog Roundtable. Craig Ross will be back with us. The band, it will be back together in full. So looking forward to that, fellas. Welcome to another year.
Better than